Today is August 20th, 2014. This is episode number 268 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, formerly Tasha Yar's stunt double. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. If you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
You know, I've gone back and watched episodes frame by frame, and I can't tell when you step in.
I know. It's because I was the spitting image of Tasha Yar or Denise Crosby.
You know, it was amazing.
She encapsulated the role so much, I kind of thought of her oftentimes as Tasha Yar.
Sure. I can totally see that. I often think of you as Tasha Yar still.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Sure. I mean, my question is, can we blame you?
No, not at all.
You know, I tell you, the hardest episode I did in her season with the Next Generation was the one with the jungle gym and the African planet. She's got to fight the chief's wife.
Yes, code of honor.
God, that was a hard fight, man. I worked up a sweat.
You know, I can imagine that. That, from what I understand, was a hard episode for everyone.
It was. And then, alas, of course, there was the accident where my stunt double career was cut short.
That was a tragedy. It was. I mean, absolute loss. Mm-hmm. Which I think that was actually the major reason why Denise Crosby eventually left the show.
Oh yeah, when I couldn't be her stunt double anymore.
Yeah, I think it had a negative impact on the entire series. Oh, losing
yeah.
you.
Oh yeah, for sure. All right, well, that bit of history.
Do you still get to go to cons and sign autographs?
You know, I can't handle it anymore. I get too sad.
You know, I can understand. That was really intense.
Yeah, yeah. All those people thanking me for my work is fantastic and everything, but it brings back too many memories.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. Anyhow, what show are we doing?
The Apple Context Machine.
Yes, of course.
I can understand how you would be confused.
Yeah, I'm often confused.
Yes, especially about your podcasts.
It's just a roulette.
Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm. So I thought what we could do is for our first topic, we could talk about what it means to be like Apple.
Yeah, and before we dive into that, I just have to say that the piece that you wrote about, is it Xiaomi?
It's probably Xiaomi.
Xiaomi?
Xiaomi.
Xiaomi?
Xiaomi. But okay. I don't know. My Chinese is non-existent, so I could be wrong.
And I learned how to speak English in Missouri, so it's a wonder I can say it at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyhow, my point is that I thought you wrote a really insightful piece, so that was really cool.
Well, thanks. And the thing that set me off, and this has been kicking around the back of my head for a long time, is people that call Xiaomi China's Apple, and they'll call the CEO, whose name is I think it's Li Jun. I forget. I don't have it in front of me either. Anyway, the CEO, they'll call him China's Steve Jobs. And it puts me on tilt because they do this because they're not thinking critically, for one thing. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. But this guy's career, at least with this company, because this was not his first company, but his career with this company has been predicated on copying Apple and copying Steve Jobs. I mean, he dresses like Steve Jobs. He holds media events that are patterned after Apple's media events. And increasingly, their devices have become more and more Apple-like in appearance, including the next device that they released, which is a spitting image of an iPhone 5 or 5S, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then they've skinned Android to look just like iOS 7.
Yeah, that's not being like Apple. That's copying a company's designs and look.
Yes.
It's parroting.
It is parroting. It's imitation. It's you know, certain, it's just you know, it's like doing an impression. It's not the real thing. And Lee Jun is his name, or Lee Jun. I don't know which how to pronounce it. And in this case, it's all very, very deliberate. I mean, this guy has just blatantly copied the way Steve looked and the way he did his presentations, and again, increasingly on the both industrial design front and the software appearance front, because it is still just Android underneath. You know, they're looking like iOS 7 now, and so it becomes fun, I suppose, for the mainstream press in particular to say that he's China's Apple or he's China's Steve Jobs. But, you know, the catalyst that finally got me to write about this was essentially, what does it mean to be like Apple? And I think that the answer to that, to being like Apple, is being able to think differently about products. It's being able to do stuff like identify pain points and then come up with innovative solutions for easing those pain points. It's about creating stuff from new and inventing new things and coming up with new ways to do things. And this company in particular doesn't come up with anything new. It's all just copied. They're just using a crappy operating system from Google. They're just doing some industrial design that has largely been invented by their betters. And they're nothing but a copying company.
You know, I've been sitting here trying to think of a company that I could compare to Apple and say they are Apple-like and not mean they are simply copying some Apple stylistic elements. And the only thing that's coming to mind right now is Nest, which ultimately ended up getting bought by Google.
Right. Right. That's true. There's a company that actually is, in many ways at least, like Apple.
Yeah, they innovated. They entered a market where they introduced a product that people didn't realize they needed until they saw it. In this case, a programmable thermostat that can learn.
Right. And we're talking about a market that was, you know, calling it moribund would be a compliment. You know, this was one of the driest markets on the planet. I mean, you know, thermostats? Are you kidding me? Who makes thermostats? It's, you know, GE makes thermostats and
Honeywell.
And Honeywell, yeah. I mean, you know, nothing exciting going on with thermostats, and, you know, programming them can be such a pain in the butt. And guess what? Those are pain points for consumers. And Tony Fadell, who is, you know, one of the only Apple executives to have success with Apple after he left, I'm sorry, to have success after he left Apple is what I'm trying to say.
There you go.
You know, he and his team identified these pain points and came up with a fantastic way of easing them, and, you know, and then it ended up selling out to Google, but that's another issue.
And they may very well at some point have gone, well, actually, no, I don't think they ever would have gone to Apple because, excuse me, that's not a market that Apple was after.
Right. It wasn't right. Right. But there's a company that is actually like Apple. They think, you know, their take on smoke and carbon monoxide detectors. Right. Again, identifying the pain points and finding ways to ease those pain points and really thinking differently about what they're doing. And Xiaomi ain't that. And I hate it when they're called China's Apple, because at best, at the very best, they are China's Samsung.
Yes. I agree completely. Yeah, they are acting very much like Samsung in that they look at products other companies are making, in this case Apple, and then figure out how they're going to mimic that product.
Yeah, and you know when Xiaomi first got its start, they weren't as blatant. He was copying Steve Jobs, Mr. Lee. I think his first name would be Jun and his last name would be Lee. He was copying Steve Jobs, but you know they weren't copying Apple's design work at first, and you know, and they all their whole claim to fame was putting out really cheap phones. And then selling services kind of like Amazon, the way Amazon did. And they were also selling direct in China, which was something that no one else was doing. And but as they've gotten bigger, and now they're a multi-billion dollar company, they're still just selling cheap Android devices. But now they've apparently decided that they really, really need to copy Apple. And that is not being like Apple. It infuriates me, and it infuriates me because it's so lazy on the part of the pundits and journalists who repeatedly call this company China's Apple and call this guy China Steve Jobs. Just so it's incredible. It's intellectually lazy, and it's work wise, it's super lazy.
Yeah, copying is not the same, or copying is not what Apple does. Therefore, by definition, you can't be a country's Apple if what you're doing is copying.
Right. Right. And on top of that, China does not have a culture of innovation. It has a culture of copying. You know, intellectual property violations have been an issue in this country for decades, or really since the communist government started loosening some economic restrictions on the company. You know, Microsoft has faced massive piracy issues there. Apple has faced piracy issues there. You know, there are fake Apple physical products with, you know, with Apple's logo on them, and, you know, copies that, that are not Apple products. People put do you remember the story we did about the oven with an Apple logo on it?
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Right? And I mean, that's not a copy of anything. Obviously, Apple doesn't even make an oven, but it
underscores the philosophy.
Yeah, it underscores the philosophy of just steal whatever you need, and the ends justifies the means, and et cetera. And in that kind of intellectual climate, how can any company be like Apple? And I don't think they can.
No, I'm not familiar enough with the overall Chinese market to even come up with a company that is even similar to Apple in that it's innovating on some level. And which is not to say that there are no companies in China that are innovating. There probably are.
I'm sure there are plenty, and I'm hardly an expert on China either, and I'm probably just getting myself in trouble here, but this stuff ticks me off.
It's okay to be ticked off, because it's like you said a few minutes ago, it's lazy and wrong to say that a company that is parroting Apple is that country's Apple.
Yeah, it's really annoying. And I think we've touched on this before, but it's interesting that Apple has been showing the world how to be Apple for, I don't know, close to two decades. Steve Jobs came back to Apple in what, 97, right? iMac was released in 98.
That sounds about right.
And yet, you know, here we are, what were we, 17 years later, 16 years after the original iMac. I mean, you know, no one else is doing it.
No, and it's fascinating, because Apple has created a blueprint that people really could copy. And yet we're seeing very few companies that are doing that.
The thing is, the thing to copy, which is saying no to everything, right? Or saying, mm-hmm. you know, saying no to almost everything, and being willing to delay a product because it's not right. I kind of have come to hate this term, but thinking outside the box, thinking differently about how to target solutions, even being a whole widget provider, all those things are very, very hard. So Apple has shown the world how to do it, but they are very, very hard things, and no one else seems willing to do that work.
I have to agree. And even when we come up with companies that were willing to do that, it's so hard that at times they fail too. And I'm thinking of Palm, because they really did innovate. That was the company that made the PDA, as we know it, truly possible. And for a long time, they were the reigning king. And eventually, they weren't able to keep that momentum going. And now, they don't exist at all.
Nope. You know what? One of the biggest shames to come out of that is John Rubinstein. I think that John Rubinstein, like Tony Fadell, would have been a former Apple executive to be successful outside of Apple. Except that he got crushed by Apple with the iPhone, and chose to accept HP's buyout offer, maybe even pursued it, and then the guy who did the buying out was fired.
Right,
and then the guy that replaced him didn't get it. The guy that replaced him wanted to make, you know, the guy who came from SAP wanted to make HP into SAP 2.0.
Right. And then he gets fired. HP's business model.
Right. And then he gets fired. And then Meg Whitman comes in and she's just got to cut to the bone and, you know, try to get everything back in order. And I've got my doubts about her too, but the point is that, you know, there was kind of a series of unfortunate events, some of which were outside of his control, not all of which, but some of which are outside of his control, and it may have derailed him. I hope that he's working on something really, really cool now.
That would be awesome. I would love to see him be an innovator again and bring us something just incredibly awesome.
Yes. Yeah, because what his company was doing, especially with WebOS was at the very least interesting, and it was never really finished, I don't think, but it was interesting.
It was never finished, and even still in its raw state, I looked at it and saw the potential for serious competition for Apple and iOS.
Yeah,
which was fantastic, because that was the kind of motivation everyone needed to have better products all the way around.
Yeah. Yeah. You and I are absolutely united in the belief that Apple having legitimate competition means that we as Apple fans will have better products.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. We don't want Apple to win because there's no contest. We want Apple to win because there's a massive contest, because we will end up being the recipients of awesomeness.
Yes. I want Apple to have to work for that win. And I want them to have to work hard.
Yes. Very hard. All right. A slight derailment. I know that you know the Doctor Who episode Midnight.
Yes, I do.
That actress, I know we talked about this, but I don't think we talked about it on the show. The actress who ends up having to say everything along with David Tennant.
Yes.
What an amazing performance.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. I mean, they both had to learn the same lines, like exactly the same lines, including reciting pi out to something ridiculous, like 30 decimal places.
Yeah.
And then she had to learn how to mimic David Tennant's style to a degree.
Yeah, his very, very particular and nuanced way of speaking.
Yeah, that was a... I've seen the behind-the-scenes stuff for that.
Oh,
that
I haven't.
You need to when you get a chance.
Oh, yeah, I want to.
It was a very difficult episode to shoot. And the set, you know, that they're on, it looks very small, and it was. So they were cramped in this tiny little space for over a week. It was amazing. And yeah, she was really good.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, before we turn this into an episode of our friends at Sci-Fi Tech Talk.
Yeah, don't worry. We're not trying to step on your toes.
Let us bounce to the interesting developments with Apple's advertising.
Oh, see, that's not where I thought you were going. I thought you were going to go into the rumors about the Space 1999 remake.
Nope. Although I'm intrigued, but we'll talk about that later.
All right, yeah. That's right. This is the Apple show, not the Sci-Fi show.
Right.
Yeah.
Advertising. So we're not talking about some... Well, I guess we have one specific catalyst for this, and that's the Apple's... Actually, I guess it's TBWHE at Day's commercial, which is Misunderstood, which was released last December.
It was for the holiday season.
Yeah, November.
Yeah, December. It was an iPhone commercial.
And it won an Emmy.
It did. So, now, for those of you that are like, I don't know what Misunderstood is. It was a commercial. It was originally a 90-second ad, and it's family with a teenage boy. They're driving to relative's house, and he's got his face in his iPhone. They get to the house. They're taking presents in. He's got his face in his iPhone. And so this is a recurring theme through the whole thing, and it's just this teenage boy with his face in his iPhone. And of course, the assumption is he's a teenage kid that's totally absorbed with his iPhone and not the people around him. The twist at the end is that his face was in his iPhone because he was filming all of this stuff, and then he used iMovie on his iPhone and made a family video that makes everyone cry.
Yeah, and it's a very, very touching ad, and a lot of Apple haters bagged on this commercial, saying that this shows the disconnect. I mean, like, completely misunderstanding, ironically, the purpose of the ad, the message of the ad, saying that it was in some way praising the disconnect or talking about how it's glorifying the way a lot of teenagers do spend too much time on their mobile devices.
Yeah, which is completely missing what the point of the ad was.
I know, which is so funny because the name of the ad is Misunderstood.
Right? Oh, there's some delicious irony right there.
Oh yeah, massive. And this, so I remember seeing several columns, especially from mainstream people, well outside even the tech blogosphere. Never mind the Apple blogosphere. Who were criticizing this ad for you know, again, just getting it exactly wrong. And yet people loved it. Real people, you know, like consumers. People that saw this ad loved it. Apple ran it for several weeks. And it seemed to really, really resonate with people. And boom, here it wins an Emmy.
Yeah. And I really liked the ad, and I know people that saw it, and they're like, oh, that's so cheesy. And I'm like, yeah, maybe I'm just a sentimental fool, because I saw it, and I was like, oh, my dust in my eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I thought it was a really well-done ad. Now, the thing is, I'm now wondering, will Apple have the in-house horsepower, people with enough caliber to be able to match ads like that, if they really do plan on bringing most of their advertising in-house?
Well, and that's the secondary catalyst for this is the reports we've had, nothing new, but the reports we've had over the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 months, talking about Apple bringing in advertising in-house, bringing in distancing itself from the Chiat Day branch that was formed solely to do Apple's commercials.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what that group is called. And it's so there's a couple of things here. The first is going back to Steve Jobs. And Steve Jobs' adamant insistence that marketing not become a big deal in Apple. That the marketing department not grow at Apple. He very much felt like when an established company starts growing its sales and marketing team in order to increase sales, the innovation takes a backseat to perpetuating whatever the heck the legacy is.
And I think that's a valid concern.
Well, look at Microsoft.
Exactly. Yeah, if your company is focusing more on getting the message out as opposed to creating the products that are going to sell and make money, then innovation very well could suffer.
And I say marketing, and actually what I mean is sales and marketing. It was sales and marketing both combined that he had a problem with. And because of this, Apple always had, since Steve Jobs came back, Apple has always had a very small sales and marketing team. Phil Schiller is the senior vice president of worldwide marketing, but he's always had a relatively small team. And part of what that team did is interact with companies like TBWA / Chiat Day and the other companies that they sometimes worked with in creating those advertisements.
You know, there's some good things to be said for leaving the advertising outside of Apple, and that is do what you do well and then pay other people to do the other things that you need done, but just make sure that you're paying people that do it really well.
Right. And the thing is, though, is this changing? So we know that Apple is definitely adding to its marketing department, right? We know this for a fact. Apple has been hiring. Apple has actually hired a few people away from that from Chiat Day.
Mm-hmm.
They've increased the headcount by several hundred people. Now, this still leaves Apple's sales and marketing department a tiny fraction of what Microsoft's is, despite the fact that Apple does more business.
True. Apple also recently hired, and I just forgot his name, the guy that worked for Nike and then Burberry. That is a social networking genius.
Right, which is part of marketing.
And he is also known for bringing marketing in-house.
He is, well, right, social marketing. So the social network marketing.
Some of the marketing campaigns from Nike, that would have been handled by outside agencies, he brought in.
Oh, I see.
So, but not to...
Yeah, I wouldn't...
It's not like he killed all external marketing. It's just...
I've never been a big fan of putting too much credence on that. It's not like he was promoted to even a vice presidential level. It's not... He wasn't hired in as someone who's answering to Phil.
Right. He answers to Angela, actually. Angela Ahrens.
Are you sure about that?
I'm pretty sure.
Because I think he's still a social network marketing guy.
But
I thought she was instrumental in bringing him in, but I didn't think he was going to be a retail guy. Could be, though. Could be.
I'm not sure.
I don't know either. Actually, I don't know for sure either. So the question is, how far is Tim Cook willing to take this? And also another question that sort of crops up in my mind is, has Phil Schiller been chafing at the limitations that Steve Jobs imposed upon him? We don't have any evidence that that's the case. He hasn't been bad-mouthing Steve, or he hasn't been saying, one of the great mistakes we made is keeping our marketing department low. Nothing like that. But I wonder if he hasn't wanted more people working for him within Apple.
You know, it's possible, but considering the success Apple has had with their marketing campaigns through outside agencies, if I were Phil, I'd be acting under the philosophy of, if it's not broken, let's not fix it. Well, but
that's just it, though. Remember the emails that we saw from Phil that came out in the Samsung trial?
I forgot about those.
Where he was saying that Samsung was beating them with the marketing message, and he was very upset with TBWA/GIA.
Yeah, I totally forgot about those. That changes everything right there.
And the way we've had that pitched in coverage of those emails and Apple's hiring of more marketing people is that this was sort of in response to that Phil was looking to make some proactive changes in order to keep this from happening in the future. Now, we don't actually know that that's the case, but that's the way it was being spun by outside observers who had sources either close to Apple or within Apple.
Yeah, that I totally forgot about those emails. Yeah. That's a very different thing. And so I can see where maybe he has been frustrated and where Steve was not willing to give Phil more control over that marketing message. Tim may very well be.
Well, I think that Phil had control over the marketing message, but what Phil didn't have is an army of people working for him. I don't think there's ever been a question about whether or not, I mean, Phil is the man who has been directing. And when Steve was alive, Steve helped a lot, right? For sure.
Of course.
But Phil is the man who is largely responsible for Apple's many successful marketing campaigns. But now this brings us back to winning this Emmy. Winning an Emmy probably doesn't mean a whole lot for Apple. You know, it would probably be a much bigger deal for another company if they won an Emmy for their advertising. It might give them more cred, but, you know, Apple's already got all the cred in the world.
Sure.
So does this complicate in any way their decision to bring some more of this stuff in-house? And I kind of doubt it, but I wonder what kind of discussions it's led to.
I'm sure there have been many discussions, some of them heated.
Probably.
Yeah. And, okay, so here's another thought. Maybe Phil has been frustrated by not being able to be as nimble as he would like with marketing campaigns and changing things when he needs to.
Mm-hmm. That could be.
And I'm not saying that Apple has been dragging through campaigns, but when you're working with an outside agency, you don't have as much control over the marketing schedule as you would if it was all in-house.
Yes. Yes. And allow us, please, to stress the fact that we are philosophizing over conjecture. You know, there's a couple things we do know. We do know that Apple's been hiring people, and we do know that Apple wants to bring some stuff in-house. We do know that Apple has brought people away from Chia Day. We don't know what Apple's specific motives are, how far they're going, exactly what kind of limitations Steve Jobs laid down before, and we don't know what Tim Cook's directives are.
That's true. But that's not going to stop us from doing our thing.
No, I think this is informed speculation, at the very least.
Sure.
But it's a interesting development. It's an interesting development. And then getting the Emmy does, at the least, strengthen Chiat Day's hands. Hand, as in poker hand.
Oh, right.
Which
right.
is the nature of that. Of that phrase. It strengthens their hand because they're able to say, look, you know, we want an Emmy for our stuff. So, and to be fair, the Verse stuff has been very successful too. And I believe that that's a product from Chiat Day.
Yeah, there you go. See,
you're more powerful than you think. That Apple's has been releasing a commercial after commercial in the last few months.
Yeah, yeah, they've been very aggressively getting their message out there. And you know, I wonder what the ads will look like come this holiday season.
Yeah.
Because if Apple has been bringing their own staff to the table to create ads, then it's very likely that come Christmas buying season that we'll see the commercials that are coming out of that those efforts.
Yeah, you know, I wonder. I don't know enough about the internal development cycle and development process for big time commercials. But I don't know that we necessarily have to see stuff this holiday season from an internal team if an internal team is being developed to do it all. It could take another year for all we know for them to start firing on all cylinders.
That's true. You almost said syllables, which I think is really funny.
Very funny.
Yeah, that's true. But they may have been building this up longer than we are aware of. And if so, I would expect that we would start seeing ads from their internal team soon.
Yeah, maybe. Hard to know. Actually, yeah, well, impossible to know without some kind of leak, and we don't have any leaks on this.
True. Okay, so if we end up with holiday ads that we look at and we're like, oh my God, that sucks, then that probably answers our question right there.
Probably.
Maybe. But I'm hoping that's not the case.
Yeah, Apple is the kind of company that could bring on hundreds of people and then decide that it's not working, scrap them, and go back to what they were doing.
That's true.
Apple doesn't cling dogmatically to any particular path.
That's true. Yeah, I could totally see Apple getting something almost running and then decide that it would be a bad business decision and then cut their losses and move on.
Yep.
Which would suck for the people they hired away from TBWA.
Yep.
Because they would suddenly be out of a job.
Yep. That's the way the Apple rolls sometimes.
So yes, it does.
Sometimes. All right. Well, I hear you have a blog.
I hear you have one, too.
I do. You hear correctly.
Yeah. Well, my blog is Fresh Brewed Tales.
Fresh Brewed Tales.
Yes.
.com. T-A-L-E-S. T-A-L-E-S. .com.
Yes, T-A-L-E-S. And it's no secret I spend a lot of time at coffee shops.
Yep.
And I'm always watching. And so I end up seeing people doing things that that just make me shake my head in disbelief.
Porn.
I know people actually look at porn on their computers in coffee shops.
Yeah. All right. So if you're listening to us right now and you are going to be in public at some point and the thought crosses your mind, I think it's time to watch some porn. Don't do it. Just we're asking you right now. Don't
do it. Really good life advice. Now, there's nothing wrong with looking at porn if that's your thing. Just don't do it in the coffee shop.
Yeah, don't do it in the coffee shop.
Do it at home.
Yeah. Privacy of your own home. That's a much better thing. But there's more than that. There's much more than that. You've got people who put their pets on counter. Don't do that either.
That's horrible.
If you're in a restaurant, don't put your pet on the counter. And for that matter, don't put your baby on the counter.
Yeah, it's just bad ideas. And especially because I'm there and I'm watching and I'm going to take a photograph or draw a picture and then I'm going to write a blog post about it and put it on the internet.
Exactly. Anyway, it's fun stuff and Jeff often includes either a photograph or a sketch of the person. I like the sketches the best myself.
I know you do. And sometimes I will do a sketch instead of a photograph just because I know it's going to put a smile on your face.
Oh, you're the best.
Well, you know.
In the meanwhile, I have a much neglected blog because I've been working so hard on editing my novel. But
an interesting blog nonetheless.
It's GeekTells, TELLS.com. And, you know, it's for basically everything that that doesn't have anything to do with Apple or the Mac Observer.
That's true. But the thing that I've been really enjoying is following your chronological adventures as you have been working through your novel.
Yes, it is kind of funny, along with my helpful illustrations.
I like your sketches. I really like your sketches.
I know you do. But I think I have more altered photographs than I do sketches. But anyway, yeah. GeekTales.com, FreshBrewTales.com. Check them out. We appreciate it. And that brings us to, unfortunately, Steve Ballmer. Wow. What's going on?
Oh,
that brings us to our blogs. Take us to Steve Ballmer. That's not right.
I suddenly feel dirty.
Ball players. I need to work on my Ballmer impression. It seems to have deteriorated since he resigned.
Yeah, he did resign from Microsoft's board of directors.
Yeah, that's what happened this week. Is he stepped down from Microsoft's board of directors, and ostensibly to. It was an interesting letter. He wrote a long letter. Now, I saw a little bit of criticism about the length of that letter on the old Twitter. And I got to tell you, I think that the length of the letter was appropriate. And I think that explaining why he's leaving Microsoft's board was important. I saw someone say something to the effect of, all I needed to say that he was quitting immediately. You know, Steve. And that would have...
That worked for Richard Nixon.
I suppose. That would have resulted in all kinds of extraordinarily negative speculation about why.
Oh, of course. People immediately would have jumped to conclusions like he was forced off the board. He's being run out of the company on a rail.
All kinds of things. So I think he wrote... Yeah. Not that I love the letter or anything, but I think it was probably quite appropriate for him to explain why, because he's not just a board member. You know, obviously he's one of the first. He's thought of as a co-founder of Microsoft, but he's really not. That was Steve Allen and Bill Gates.
Right, but he was there at the beginning.
He was there. Yeah, I think he finished up school, so he waited a year or so. And then, or maybe two, and then came out, and you know he was their sales and marketing guy, and blah blah blah, and of course he was CEO for the company for a long time, so you know he's not just a board member quitting, and it was appropriate for him to explain, but ostensibly the reason why he left the board is to focus in part on
his new venture,
yeah, the Clippers. The LA,
which is a sports team.
Yes, it is a sports team. It's the one where they throw the ball, and it hits that. Sometimes it might hit that board that's up in the air, and then it goes through the circle that has the strings dangling from it.
Now, the awesome thing, it is out of this is that most people probably don't know that I am almost completely sports illiterate.
I don't spend a lot of time with sports in my life either, but I do know what baseball. That's just funny. I do know what basketball is.
And the awesome thing is the description you gave, everyone would be like, oh yeah, basketball. And the only reason I knew it was basketball was because I knew ahead of time that it was basketball.
Fair enough. So he bought the Clippers from Donald Sterling, who was forced out after his wife or girlfriend. I think it was his
wife. I think his wife was pissed off about his girlfriend.
No.
Something?
She recorded him telling her not to bring black people to the games, to his games.
Oh, that's really bad.
Yeah, and the way it was grabbed hold of was that he somehow didn't want black people at his games, which is probably ridiculous. the actual context was that he was accusing her of, and he's like 80 something, and she's like not, she's like 30 something, and he was accusing her of bringing boyfriends to the games, and he didn't, and it was still a racist thing that he said. He didn't want her bringing her black boyfriends to the game, so it's still racist, but it's not like he didn't want black people at the games, because that's just ridiculous. But it was nonetheless seized on and greatly criticized, as it deserved to be, and he was eventually forced into selling his franchise despite the fact that he didn't want to.
And ultimately, Steve Ballmer bought it.
Steve Ballmer bought it for $2 billion. Steve has plenty more billions where that came from.
That's a pretty expensive way to ensure that you always have season tickets, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of money to pay for a sports franchise. But, you know, it's he greeted Clippers fans for the first time. In a
pub. Now, is this something that someone that just bought a sports team would normally do?
I don't know. It happens so frequently, so infrequently. Mark Cuban, who owns the Mavericks, is very, very involved with the Mavericks, and he's very involved with the team's fans and whatnot. And, you know, quite frankly, it's funny. I actually thought Steve was definitely doing. He was hooting and hollering. He was, you know, he didn't start screaming ball players, but he was hooting and hollering.
It'll happen.
And yelling and doing that little jerky fist thing that he does and high-fiving people and stuff. And the funny thing is that it looked a lot more appropriate at a sporting event than it did at Microsoft events, at least in my opinion.
That's really funny. What is it that people are going to start calling him now?
It was Lee Dronick, one of our readers, Lee Dronick, who...
Oh, right.
He quipped that people were going to start calling him Clippy.
And I think that's so very appropriate.
It's so funny. It's very, very funny, Lee. Thank you very much for that comment. But, yeah, so Steve is leaving Microsoft. He's gone, actually. He left. It was effective immediately. He says he just doesn't have time. He says he's keeping his stake in Apple and Microsoft. Boy,
that was really funny.
Just Freudian slipping all over the place.
So without giving like a 30-day notice, does that have like a negative impact on
his deposit, on
his retirement package, his deposit?
No, he's still filthy rich, and I would assume if there was some vested package of Microsoft shares that hadn't come up, that he would be forfeiting those for being on the board. But, you know, that's probably really doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. He remains Microsoft's biggest individual shareholder, by the way.
Oh, so he can still have his say with his vote.
Correct. He absolutely can. He's got 4% of the company, roughly. Some 300 million shares. He's got more shares than Bill Gates.
Wow.
Yeah. It's worth a ton of money. And I would imagine, I think it's a good thing for Microsoft that he's gone. I believe that Steve's lack of vision has hampered Microsoft for a long time. And
oh, I totally agree.
And if Satya Nadella wants to make significant changes at Microsoft, not having Steve looking over his shoulder going, oh, okay, I guess if you want to do that, you can. You know, it's probably going to help the rate of progress.
I bet you're right. Yeah, because with Steve out of the way completely now, it's there won't be second guessing of anything. Or it's very unlikely.
Correct.
Yeah. Clippy. I really like that.
Clippy. For the Clippers. You see what he did there?
That's very clever. And me, even being sports illiterate, I got the joke.
Oh, that's good, because you're not illiterate. You're not, you know, like...
Right. I can read some words.
Yeah, you know what the words mean.
Right.
So, I don't know. Definitely, it's an end of an era, and that's probably for the best.
Yes. Yeah, it probably is.
Probably for the best. But all right, that's I think we got a show.
I think we do.
So, okay. I probably managed to piss some people off this week, but that's okay.
Well, you know, we have to shake things up every now and then. It's how we roll.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for all of you that are pissed off now because of Clippy, it's okay. It's just a joke. All right, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Yes, thanks for listening. I forgot I've got a script I'm supposed to be reading here. Thanks for listening. Because our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And despite our inability to read our own scripts, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.